to episode 4 of Prioritizing, a married couple's faith-based insight into what is most important in marriage, in education, and in life. We are that married couple. I am Michael Pryor, joined by my much better and better looking half, Samantha. Hi, Samantha.
Hey, Michael. Hi, everyone. I was thinking, Michael, why don't we start by reviewing quickly last week, and we talked a little bit about classroom management systems and different techniques you can use, as well as the pros and cons of some of these systems. We discussed Class Dojo, a checkbook system, as well as the clip charts and different things you can do in the beginning of the year to set up a structured and supportive environment.
Yeah, and another thing that you mentioned last week too was there is no universal system that's going to work for every teacher or for the same teacher every year, because you're going to get a whole new bunch the next year, and they're going to have a different dynamic.
And their needs are different.
Right, exactly. So it's always good to be flexible. It's good to have a lot of tools in your teacher toolbox. And we also, one thing I wanted to mention last week I made a note of and didn't mention, you know, we go back and forth talking about, you know, different approaches to education, different styles. There are so many different teaching styles, and it's not to say that one or a few are superior to all others. Like, some teachers are just very good at having the class in rows and having class discussions and being very old school in a sense. There are teachers who can make that work for them, and they make it work for the students. And if that's the case for you, then that is absolutely terrific. It's all about whatever gets the students engaged and loving learning. And if that's how you do it, then more power to you. There are also teachers more like myself who are a bit more, I guess you could say, animated in front of the group. I took a lot away from my student teaching experiences with Mr. Jennings. Shout out to Mr. Jennings if you ever tune in. He actually taught me that you get to be your self in front of students. And this was a first grade class I'm in front of, and it was freeing to realize, oh, I can just be a goofball while I'm teaching. And, you know, it's like, wow. And then all the weight was lifted off of me, and then I realized how, I won't say easy, but how much more enjoyable teaching became for me when I realized I could do that. And I've loved it ever since.
And the students pick up on it too, when you're confident in what you're teaching and what you're selling, and that in turn will help them learn to find the joy and the love in learning and in knowledge. And if you're up there trying to be someone you're not, they can read right through that. So it's really important to do what works for you and to tone into your strengths and pass that on and display that for no matter who you're teaching, no matter students, adults, back to school night, whatever it might be.
Well said, Samantha. So this week we are going, our topic is To Sir with Love, as you probably noticed in the title. For those of you that don't know, To Sir with Love was a movie, and we should have researched it a bit more to find out the year, but I would guess
early 70s,
I think that sounds about right, judging by
their clothing
acting abilities. So what was your, and aside from the acting of course, what was your major takeaway from To Sir with Love?
I would say the moral, you know, the moral of the story is really good, and you learn to fall in love with the main character and connect to them, especially from a teacher's perspective. It's about this engineer who can't seem to find a job and gets hired teaching, which he's never done before. And he comes in and tames, or tries to tame, this wild class that has driven out teacher after teacher and just has quite the reputation.
Yeah, and one of the quotes right from the beginning of the movie, another teacher asks him, you know, why take up teaching? And his response is, you know, it's, I can't find an engineering job, and it's always good to have some kind of a job. I'm reminded, too, of another movie, Mr. Holland's Opus, when Richard Dreyfuss, the main character, refers to teaching as a fallback position. And the principal immediately says, you know, I worry about teachers who consider teaching a fallback position.
We're going to focus today,
as both
of course,
characters learn, as solely on To Serve With Love. But I think it's important to note that both characters quickly realize that teaching is not a profession that one can take lightly. And those that do, as Samantha mentioned, students are going to know, they're going to realize it, and they're going to chew them up and spit them out. Like our main character in To Serve With Love started to realize, and I don't have the actor's name, never seen him before, really. But he learns that early in the movie, and then he learns from his experiences with the students as he begins to engage them. From his failures, he learns, and from the failures of his colleagues, that what they're doing and what he's doing just isn't working. And there has to be a reason that these kids, year in and year out, are seen as failures. And he decides to make it a point to change that. And I'd say he does a pretty good job at that, wouldn't you, Samantha?
Yeah, I do. And he sets a great example for all of us teachers out there that if something's not working, there's no shame in that, but it's important to reflect and to really analyze the situation to help the kids, that the kids come first and you're with them for such a long period of their life and their year, most of their day, and it's so important to try to get through to them and make that the best hours that they have in their day.
That's a great point, Samantha.
And you see early in the movie, that's a good point. And, you know, it starts out slowly, and the main character is trying to make connections in any way he can. And you actually, he picks the brain of a fellow colleague in the teacher's room and asks, you know, how did all these other teachers go wrong? And that teacher says, well, one teacher tried to be their friend. And for those of you teachers out there, and I'm sure some of you non-teachers as well, can realize that that could end poorly, especially when you're dealing with high school students. Why is that, Samantha? Why can't we be the students' friends?
Well, and I think the students are looking for structure as much as they don't want to admit it, regardless of the age that you're at, in high school, per se. But the older students get, they need that routine, and they need the consistency of knowing, okay, these are the expectations, and this is what's their responsibility, and what is the responsibility of the teacher. And when you try to be their friend, it creates a hazy area. Because you're not their friend. You need to teach them and discipline them and support them in the individual areas that they're struggling and that they need support. And as a friend, you're more apt to please them. And that's not always the case. Well, many times during the day, yeah, I hope I'm pleasing all my students, but my job is to not be their friend, to help them become a better citizen, a better person, to understand empathy and the characteristics that I hope that they admire in some of the literature we study, as well as social situations. So you're just helping them to become better. We can always be better no matter how old we are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, I don't mean to draw on like a hierarchy or anything, but with a teacher assuming the role of buddy to the students, it gives the students the perception that they're on the same level. And in the school, they are not. I mean, of course, you know, we're all images of God, but in the school setting, they are not equals. And it needs to be made clear, and not by saying it, but just by how the teacher conducts him or herself with a professional manner and keeping that professional distance from their students. They can still have great connections with everybody, and have a great time in the classroom, but that line in the sand must be drawn. One thing that the main character had asked too, the teacher who he was speaking to when he was trying to find out more about the failures of his predecessors, the teacher had said, well, another teacher didn't care about them. I'm going to keep throwing it off to you, Samantha. What's the problem here?
Well, kids know when you don't care, and it's important that you are able, as you had mentioned, Michael, to connect to them. and to find that common ground, because they need to know that the teacher is going to be there for them, whether they mess up, whether they do the right thing. So having that, it all just goes back to establishing that relationship with your class and letting them know that there is a respect on both parts. The students need to respect the teacher, but the teacher also needs to respect the students and respect where they are and what they need. And it's not just in how you present yourself in your actions, but also present yourself physically. You know, that character that he was asking about was kind of a mess, and he had, his clothing was always just drawn and his hair was a mess, and that was kind of a theme for the movie. So by the end, he kind of got himself together, and the students had acknowledged it and were surprised, as well as the other colleagues. So I think too, in how you present yourself and carry yourself, sets an example for the kids you have in your classroom.
Yeah. I can say this too, just by dress alone. As a second grade teacher, and you're nodding and you know where I'm going with this, I felt it was important to always dress to the nines and wear a suit to work. It wasn't to, you know, intimidate or anything, but it was to show that I respect the job that I have, and I take it very seriously, not only to the people around me, but to my students, so they know that I'm all business, if you will.
What's that saying? Dress for the job you want, not the job you have, or something.
Yes, along those lines? That is the one. And that worked out, so maybe it was those suits that got me to where I am. So thank you to those. At one point in the movie too, it presses on, and I admire this character, and I'm not sure if every beginning teacher has this kind of ability to self-reflect, but the teacher comes back right after scolding the class and actually raising, you know, losing his temper, and he comes back and he vents to his colleague, and he says, I swore I would never lose my temper, and he seems so disappointed in himself, and I found that's when I started to really connect with the character. I was really drawn to him. I thought, oh, this is kind of, you know, good for him. He's very humble in that he can admit when he's wrong and that he wants to fix it. Even a novice teacher like him, or a beginner teacher, I should say, knew what detriment that could have on the relationship between teacher and student going forward. So he was really disappointed in himself, and I think he went above and beyond to fix it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would, and it sets a good example, and I am pretty confident saying it as any teacher out there. We've all been there, but not even just teachers. As humans, we've been there when we've reacted poorly, whether that be with our family, with friends, or with our spouse, where our reactions haven't always been ideal. And regardless of what situation you're in, it's important to own your actions, own up and apologize and move on.
Moving on, exactly. And that's the kids sensed his weaknesses in the beginning of the movie, and they preyed on it. But then as the movie pressed on, they realized how humble he was, and the kids really have a keen intuition, and they're sharp. They can sense when something's wrong. I know we touched on that before. They can sense when you're vulnerable and when you're completely confident in front of the class. So it's important to exude that in a professional and respectful manner, in any way you can. One thing too I want to touch on, you'll notice in the movie, he's very, and I'm speaking mainly to anyone who's seen this, and Samantha, of course, but if you haven't, in the movie, the character is very strict. When he changes the classroom around, he demands that everyone will call gentlemen sir, and the ladies will be called miss. So it became a very regimented classroom. And he was all business. He didn't laugh too much. You didn't see his teeth, I don't think, until halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
But then as the movie's pressing on, he's kind of opening the classroom up to discussion and letting the kids dictate where the lessons go, and he's laughing with them, and he's appropriately joking with them at times. So that goes back to what we were talking about, I think, in the first podcast. You know, you set those first weeks of school, you set yourself as, you know, Mr. and Ms. Strict, and this is how it's going to be until the students get it. And as the year presses on, the students get used to your routine and procedures in the classroom, that you too get to loosen up. Because by that time, you don't need to be strict anymore, because the students get it, and they know what to do and when to do it.
And strict doesn't necessarily mean mean.
Right.
You know, it's not being rude or short or unfair. Strict is just being clear with your expectations and clear with your consequences. And I think, too, as you had mentioned, this main character is opening up the classroom, but he also opened it up to the community, and there's shots of him walking through the farmer's market, and parents and families are speaking so highly of him and are showing their gratitude for all that he's done and really making a difference in the lives of this school and this community. And I think we must never lose sight of how important our actions carry over into all areas.
Right. That's a very good point, Samantha. One thing, too, you'll notice these kids, and I'm sure many of you have seen this, whether you're educators or not, kids that'll even if you're parents, I know you've seen this, kids can hold grudges, and they can, you know, people don't want to forgive, you know, if the other person is in the wrong, or if they started it, I guess. I'm reminded of a scene where the gym teacher forced an unathletic kid to make a very difficult jump, and the kid got really hurt because of it. And another student took it upon himself to, remember the scene I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
To go at the teacher, physically attack him. The main character came back and demanded that the student who attacked the teacher apologize to that teacher, even though the teacher kind of instigated that situation and didn't make a very good professional judgment call. But the main character kept saying, you know what, he's not my responsibility, you are. I can think of a million times when people either don't do something on purpose, like if they knock somebody's stuff off the desk, but they didn't do it on purpose, they won't follow up with an apology. It's good manners to do so, I think. And or like in this case, if they didn't start it, or if they're not the ones really in the wrong, then why should they apologize? Well, he hit me first, and I hit him back. Why should I apologize?
And so often, if students feel like they can justify their actions, that it's all okay. And I think for me, especially, that's been one of the hardest things to teach is, yeah, I don't care if you had a reason. Like, it's never okay. And how do you get that point through to those impressionable little minds?
There are many instances, I feel, and I've said this plenty of times, you may have even heard me say this before, I used to say the why is not important. The why is not important. Now, there are sometimes when it is, of course, but when it's being disguised as a justification, then I'm not interested in hearing it.
And I think, too, it's just the bottom line is taking responsibility for your actions.
Absolutely.
And owning up to what you've done and how you're going to make that change going forward.
Now, I'd like to draw attention to one of the main quote that I wrote down from the film. The principal was giving a slew of compliments to this teacher because he saw the class and they were acting beyond respectful and calling each other sir and miss. And the principal said, my goodness, you know, what have you done with this class to make them so respectful? And he just shook his head and said, it has nothing to do with me. And I just found that so incredibly moving for him to show such humility. As a young guy, first-year teacher, he could have basked that up and said, yeah, well, I've been, you know, working really hard, which he has. That would have been truth. But instead, he decides to shed light on these kids, these troubled kids, who probably have never been lifted up in their lives. So I just give him all the credit for that.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's so important that these characters are going through some pretty hard things in their lives. You know, you have students who, one student, his mother passed away. Another student lived in a really bad part of neighborhood, and there were struggles with race and different challenges that still are present today. So I think this main character, with expressing that humility and getting to know his students, he was able to help them all the more. So it's, as Michael had mentioned in a previous episode, I think as well, you know, we must take the time to get to know our students and their needs. So that would be one thing that really resonated with me too, but also the way that this main character carries himself and how he works together with his colleagues and helps the students expose them to things that they never thought they were worthy of. One example is he took them on a field trip to a museum, and no one could believe that they had gotten permission to leave the school building because they were such a horrible class.
Right.
And it made a world of difference to these kids, and they finally felt that they were worthy and deserving to learn.
You know what you mentioned there, Samantha? That only further supports the notion that, you know, we have to connect with every single one of our students who come through our doorways. Because each one of them comes from their own unique background. They all have their own story, their own strengths and weaknesses. And we have 180 days to get to know these students and learn about what makes them tick. And they're, you know, a lot of these kids are at our feet, and they want to let us know anything and everything about them. And it's really moving to see a teacher, you know, go that extra mile to find out about what makes these kids tick and to meet them where they are.
Well, and that's important too. You know, we take time in the beginning of the year to have parent-teacher conferences. And one thing I did this year was have student-teacher conferences where I was able to sit down with the kids and talk about what their strengths were in years past and what they felt successful with, what they wanted to work on. But I also think establishing times outside of the school day to get to know the families and show an interest, whether it be community events or soccer games, whatever it might be, it's really exciting for the students and helps build your relationship with them when they're able to build that connection with you outside of your typical school day.
Right, and you see them, if you see them in a restaurant or something, they scream and run up to you. But if they see you in school, it's, oh, hi, Mrs. Pryor.
Yeah, and they're, you know, kids are so sweet, and they're, I think sometimes they forget that teachers have a life outside of teaching. So it's important to share that with them, too, and, you know, share stories, and they'll begin to ask about your family, and you ask about theirs, and things that they had going on or that are important to them, and that's what this teacher and To Sir With Love does, is he forms those personal connections with
his students. And despite the, you know, how unrealistic the movie may have seemed, you know, with the dated acting and the seemingly, I don't know.
There are some goofy parts.
Yeah, over-dramatized scenes. Despite those things, the message was still clear that this teacher had an abundance of success because he opened his heart to these troubled kids, and he didn't just say, this is the bad class, or this is the group, watch out for them, and he didn't just take that and say, oh, you know, here we are again, this class is terrible, this is going to be a long year. He made the best of it, and, you know, it's a something for all of us teachers to want to aspire to, not to his character necessarily, but just to that mentality of doing whatever we can to make our year and these students' lives with us an absolute success.
Definitely, and I think, too, allowing them to know with complete certainty that we're not going to give up on them. You know, yes, they're going to make mistakes, but they're kids, and that's normal, that's natural. So regardless of what mistakes they do make, we'll help them get through it and help them learn it. And that's what this teacher definitely did.
Hear, hear. To Sir With Love.
Worth watching.
Yeah, I would say so. It's you might chuckle a few times, but once you get past the first 10 or 15 minutes and you stop laughing at the you know, the silliness of it and get into the story. It really is a powerful film, and thank you to my principal for recommending it to us. We enjoyed it. We're going to wrap up now. Quick shout out to, I'm a big MacGyver fan. Always was a MacGyver fan growing up.
This was the highlight of the movie.
It really was. They were rolling the credits, and I saw that Michael, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Michael Desbares. Anyway, he's an actor, but he, in the sitcom MacGyver, he plays the character Murdoch, which is the villain of all villains. He appears in maybe 6 or 7 episodes. And he, they're rolling the credits, and one of the, like, one of the students who didn't have a big role was in it, and they showed his name, and it was Michael Desbares, and I thought that was so cool.
So Michael instantly had to pause the screen and quiz me on where I knew the face and the name from.
She didn't get it.
I did not. I did see MacGyver first, but that's not where I got it from. And I think it was Murdoch. I was just guessing shows that he watches.
And I think I'm kind of relieved that she didn't recognize the name, because
that would have been a little pathetic.
That's probably a good thing. But anyway, if you're a Michael Desbares fan, or if you're an education fan, or just in
looking for a good feel good movie,
about an hour and a half, worth it. If you know, Oscar award winning acting is your number one priority, then
don't watch it.
I would recommend going elsewhere. Maybe go on Netflix and check out MacGyver seasons 1 through 7.
And on that note, we will catch you next week.
Next Thursday we'll be back, and again, we're kind of just flying by the seat of our pants, making we discuss things during the week. If something catches us, like we watched this movie a few days ago, we said, "Oh, perfect, let's talk about this." And then who knows what'll come up this week?
Yeah.
But we will catch you next Thursday. Thank you for being with us, prioritizing Michael and Samantha.